Impact, Close-Up.
NICAP, the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. Who are they, and what's their purpose? These and other questions will be asked and answered tonight on Impact Close-Up. Your reporter is Fred Patrick. NICAP was formed in 1956. Their main goals, as quoted from the UFO Evidence, which is a documented report from NICAP, are scientific investigation and research of reported unidentified flying objects and encouragement of full reporting to the public by responsible authorities of all information which the government has accumulated on this subject. This reporter made a trip to Washington, D.C. recently in order to gather more details on this nonprofit organization, which has taken it upon itself to bring this very controversial subject before the public. We talked with several members of NICAP, including the acting director of NICAP, Mr. Richard Hall. We asked Mr. Hall exactly what his title was and what it represents.
I'm the acting director of NICAP. The director is Major Donald E. Kehoe, Marine Corps retired. I'm the executive officer of the organization, and I supervise all the investigations and the reporting of information.
We next asked Mr. Hall to explain a little further exactly what NICAP is and the purpose of NICAP.
NICAP stands for the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. We were formed in order to investigate reported unidentified flying objects, better known as flying saucers. We want to gather all reliable information on this subject and make it public. We have approximately 6,000 members. We're growing rapidly. In the past few months, we've gained about 300 members. We are a true cross-section of American life. You name a category, and we have a member in it. We have pilots, scientists, engineers, clergymen, and all sorts of people.
The governing structure of NICAP consists of a board of directors and a large number of experts from different fields of government work and scientific work. We asked Mr. Hall along this line to give us the name of some of his board of governors.
Mr. J.B. Hartranft, Jr., who is here in Washington, he's the president of the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association. He was the founder of the U.S. Air Guard, which is now the Civil Air Patrol. We have a Virginia board member, Colonel Joseph Bryan III in Richmond, who is a former special assistant to the Secretary of the Air Force. Dr. Charles P. Olivier, who is the president of the American Meteor Society and the former head of Flower and Crook Observatory in Pennsylvania. These are just a few. We have 10 or 12 board members and a panel of advisors, a few dozen scientists and engineers.
We then asked Mr. Hall about publications from NICAP.
We have a membership newsletter which is published bimonthly. It's called the UFO Investigator, and we have from time to time published booklets and pamphlets.
Also, a publication of NICAP is known as the UFO Evidence. We asked him about this.
UFO Evidence is a documentary report which is a one-shot affair. We may publish supplements of it later on. This covers the whole UFO subject from World War II through 1963. The end of 1963 was our cutoff date. We're now planning a 1964 supplement.
We next asked Mr. Hall if any of these publications have been submitted to Congress for any reason.
Yes, we have. In fact, the UFO Evidence documentary report was submitted to every member of Congress in summer of 1964. We have also distributed it, to universities and other places, but we're particularly interested in having Congress look into this entire matter. There are some congressmen who feel quite strongly that there is a lot to this subject and that it ought to be probed. We have had difficulty in finding a committee chairman who is willing to stick his neck out a little bit and do something about it. I can read you a few of the remarks. Senator Paul Douglas of Illinois said he was encouraged to see the concentrated efforts of NICAP to have all of the facts about UFOs brought out to the public. quote, "I will certainly offer my contribution of time and effort to get to the bottom of these reports," unquote. Senator Harrison A. Williams, Jr. of New Jersey stated, quote, "The UFO evidence report is indeed an impressive document and should be given the most careful consideration," unquote. There are a number of other congressmen and senators who feel the same.
I received several back copies of their bi-monthly publication of NICAP's The UFO Investigator. One of these publications, marked April and May of 1961, stated on the front page in bulletin form that NICAP has been assured of an official UFO investigation, including a thorough probe of the Air Force secrecy. As now planned, this will come within 2 or 3 months, but increasing pressure will probably speed it up. And it went on to say that the official investigators will evaluate verified UFO reports, contradictory Air Force explanations of sightings, and several other things. This investigation never took place. The reasons we do not know. However, in my interview, I asked Mr. Hall if, in his opinion, there was any chance of a congressional investigation perhaps this year.
I think there is an excellent chance this year because there is a great deal of public interest in the subject, and the congressmen and senators are getting a great many letters on it. In fact, it was recently reported in an area newspaper that Senator Thomas J. Dodd of Connecticut is now considering looking into the subject and holding some hearings.
You're listening to Impact Close-Up on W. Lee Radio. Tonight's subject, NICAP, the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon. This reporter has long been interested in the subject of UFOs, and I was extremely interested in probing the subject further. Upon arriving in Washington to visit the NICAP offices, the first thing I did was to get lost, which isn't very unusual for me. Finally, the offices were discovered, and I proceeded to walk up to the third floor of an old hotel building. I entered a room stacked with files and loose papers of every description. There were envelopes with addresses reading simply, "Flying Saucers, care of Washington, D.C. The post office knew where to send them. There was a map showing reported sightings of UFOs this past year. Back copies of the bi-monthly publication, The UFO Investigator, and of course, people. People talking about flying saucers and about the Air Force and their stand on UFO subject, which seemed a little strange to me. I talked with Mr. Hall and other members present about the Air Force's stand on the UFO question. Mr. Hall's comment was,
"Well, the Air Force has for the past 6 or 8 years issued regular statements which give the impression that nothing at all out of the ordinary is going on. Nobody has seen anything unusual. They have what we consider glib explanations for many, many sightings by excellent witnesses. So their overall attitude is to debunk the subject and deny it."
The next logical question in my mind was to ask Mr. Hall, why did the Air Force suddenly begin hushing up on the UFO question?
Well, we can only speculate. Back through about 1952, the Air Force was taking the subject very seriously, and in fact, it was reported that some very high-ranking generals in the Pentagon were responsible for the famous Life magazine article in April 1952, which left a very strong suggestion that these objects were from another planet. I think at some point along the line, a change in policy occurred where somebody felt it would be wiser not to say anything until the Air Force had all the answers. They're so far out on a limb now with their secrecy that there's no easy way out of it.
Another one of those present in the NICAP offices was Mr. Paul Dickey, who is a member of NICAP and is employed as a communications engineer for the U.S. government. We also placed this question to Mr. Dickey as to why he thought the Air Force had suddenly started censoring UFO reports.
I think basically there are several reasons. One is that it would be quite a shock to most people's ego as a person and as a nation and as a civilization to think that somebody is further advanced than we are. Number two, the government doesn't have, I don't believe anyone has all the answers, because this race of beings that has us under observation is so far advanced in technology, much further advanced than we are. It would just not be reasonable to release all this information and say, "Well, I just don't know the answers." It wouldn't be good morale Number three, it would be pretty hard on the economy, especially the stock market, to break this information all at once. In general, it's better that this information be leaked out to the public by bits and pieces, and that they become aware of it, and that they let it become part of their lives, something to live with, as we became aware of the hydrogen bomb and learned how to live in a world that our lives were threatened. Although I do not believe that these visitors are threatening us, we have very little indication that they're hostile to us. The few account of hostility have been explained in my mind as being strictly accidental cases of violence.
I then put the same question to Mr. Hall in his opinion. Did he think that the UFOs were posing any direct danger or any kind of danger whatsoever to the security of this country or to the world?
I don't think there's any direct physical danger from them because they have apparently been around for a very long time. There's been no open sign of hostility, and I think people who have demonstrated this kind of power, if they had any desire to conquer us or attack us, they could have done so at any time. There would have been no contest. Well, I think there is a danger if secrecy continues, for the very reason that the public will be uninformed and unaware of this, and if they suddenly encounter UFOs, or if UFOs suddenly start landing all over the place, this might result in some kind of panic due to their lack of knowledge on the subject.
From information I had read in the past, I had gotten the opinion that foreign governments looked on the UFO subject in giving out information about UFOs. I put this question to Mr. Hall, and his reply:
they are pretty similar. For instance, in England, they have a policy almost identical to ours. They use almost exactly the same words in denying that there's anything going on. A few countries are more liberal, or have been from time to time, particularly Argentina and Brazil. Brazil, for instance, set up a high-level commission consisting of active military officers, representatives of the Brazilian armed services, attorneys, scientists, engineers, and they look into the subject and distribute information on it.
Upon reading the UFO report, I noted that there were very few photographs of flying saucers. Most of those in the book were drawings of a photograph. There were a few exceptions where a photo was shown. I asked Mr. Hall if he thought there were any authentic photographs of UFOs available.
Yes, I do. We have some photographs. We don't have any copies of them available for distribution, but there have been various photographs of UFOs published from time to time, and a few of them come from very reliable witnesses and show some unusual things. Overall, we do not consider the photographs to be very good evidence of UFOs, particularly still photographs, because they're so easily faked. There again, it boils down to the character of the witness.
While at the offices, I was shown a copy of 10 photographs which NICAP had just received, which had been carefully examined by photographic experts to rule out any possibility of a fake photograph or have someone have been tampering with the negative. These, in other words, had, in the mind of NICAP, been stamped as authentic photographs of UFOs. 10 of them were in the pack, and I understand that they will be eventually printed up in a booklet of some sort and will be for sale. There were, needless to say, some very startling pictures in there. The flurry of sightings in Virginia during the latter part of December and on through January and a short part of February sent NICAP officials to the state to gather whatever information they could find. 2 sightings were investigated thoroughly by NICAP. Mr. Hall now gives us the details.
We interviewed or investigated 2 separate landing reports over there. One was the December 21st case reported by Horace Burns of Grottoes, who said he saw a UFO cross the road ahead of his car. His car stalled and the object landed in the field. We visited with Professor Ernest Gaiman of the Eastern Mennonite College, and he has done a very thorough investigation job for us. He is an NICAP member. The other incident was more recent. I believe the date was January 19, in also near Waynesboro. This involved a man who said that he had witnessed a UFO landing and saw some small beings emerge from the object. there was no kind of communication. He just was confronted by these beings, and he stated that he was very frightened by the experience. Now, I hasten to add that we don't necessarily believe this story 100%. We're interested in objective scientific investigation, and that's why we were there. But one point I would like to make is that this man very obviously had been intimidated by some kind of government agents, unidentified. We don't know who they were, Air Force, FBI, CIA. But it was very obvious from talking to this man's friends, who are very responsible local citizens, that this man had been intimidated. He could not talk about his experience.
Mr. Hall, in your investigation of these two sightings, were there any material evidence of a craft of some kind landing?
No, in the first case, December 21st, there was physical evidence. Professor Gaiman investigated the site and tested it with a Geiger counter and found extremely high radioactivity at where the object had been seen to land. This was later denied by the Air Force, or they implied that Professor Gaiman was a professor of German and didn't know what he was doing. But the Air Force failed to mention that a couple of DuPont engineers were also present and verified the high radioactivity. And this is a good form of physical evidence, as was the fact that the man's car motor failed as the UFO passed by. In the second case, there was no physical evidence, but there had been several rain and snowstorms in between the sighting and the investigation, so this is not too surprising.
As you heard Mr. Hall said in the case up at Grottoes, the man said that when the alleged UFO hovered over his car or passed over it, his engine stalled out. This also happened in the case of a sighting in Williamsburg, which you are probably familiar with, where two men were driving down the highway, and in separate cars, both men said their cars stalled out as they came within sight of a large cone-shaped object hovering over a field. These sightings and sightings in years gone by have also shown cases where electronic effects have come about when the UFO had been sighted. I asked Mr. Hall if there was any explanation for this.
Yes, we have a section in the UFO evidence report which lists past cases of so-called electromagnetic interference. There is no known explanation for this. There are a few guesses that it apparently is some powerful electrostatic field causing it, but the exact mechanism of how it works, nobody knows.
Another case on record concerning these electromagnetic interferences happened several years ago when a group of jet planes were heading out to sea down somewhere in the southern part of the country near Florida, and something happened and they never returned again. So they sent another Coast Guard plane out to try to find them, see if perhaps they had crashed or something, and this plane, too, would never return. Although they could never be sure, they believed that some kind of electronic interference had caused their radar and their compass to go completely out of whack, and thus they lost their course and simply ran out of fuel in the middle of the Atlantic. This is, too, a very interesting case. It has been the policy of the press, both presses, to report on UFO sightings only within the state that the sighting occurs. I hasten to add here that both presses here in Virginia, I think, gave very excellent coverage to sightings here in the Virginia area. And for this reason, the Richmonders did not know whether Virginia was the only place where flying saucers were being seen during December and January. We, of course, knew they were being seen here. And until this report, I feel, most Richmonders didn't have any idea that there were sightings elsewhere during the same period. We asked Mr. Hall about this.
Yes, as a matter of fact, when the sightings were occurring in Virginia, they were actually occurring all up and down the East Coast. And apparently, these stories very seldom go out on news wires outside of a given state. So the overall picture is not realized by anyone in one state. We did get sightings at the same time from New Hampshire. Incidentally, there was a case of a car being stalled as the UFO passed over in New Hampshire. There were sightings in Massachusetts, Connecticut, North Carolina, and Georgia. When the sightings stopped in the Virginia area, they also stopped up and down the coast, and now they have shifted out to the West Coast, and we're starting to get very similar reports from Washington State, Idaho, Oregon, and all that region. There was one case where a border patrolman reported seeing a large disc-shaped object which descended and hovered above his car, ahead of his car, and then after hovering for a few seconds, zoomed back up through the overcast and disappeared. On the same night, there was a reported landing, which the object left markings on the ground.
It's the same sort of thing. It's been very consistent over the years, but appears to be an unusual number of reported landings in the past year or so.
One thing in my mind which has never been quite clear, and has left me to a very small extent a skeptic of some sightings of UFOs, has been the unusual number of sightings of different types of objects, and sizes too. They have ranged from round discs 3 to 5 feet in diameter to large cigar-shaped objects as much as 500 feet in diameter. The ones in Williamsburg and Grottoes here in Virginia reported cone-shaped objects. They're all kinds of shapes and sizes, it seems. I asked Mr. Hall if there was any explanation of why there were so many different shapes and sizes of these things.
Well, actually, it seems like there's a large variety of types of UFOs reported, but they boil down to maybe 8 or 10 distinct types. They're usually disc-shaped or egg-shaped or cigar-shaped. The cone-shaped is a little rarer, or has been until recently, but there are such reports described in the UFO evidence, including one just about 2 years ago of about 5 separate groups of policemen in Ohio who saw cone-shaped objects maneuvering around.
Mr. Hall, do you have any explanation as to why there are so few reports of cone-shaped objects?
That might be the late model.
Well, maybe that sounds a little ridiculous, but let's remember, if there were a little spaceman up there looking down upon us, you would probably wonder, too, why there are so many different types of cars running around. One of the other men we talked to, you've heard from him already, Mr. Paul Dickey, has for us a story now which he was a witness to, as were many other people, which took place during January, a sighting occurrence in Washington, D.C., which involved more than just the UFO. I asked Mr. Dickey if he would mind explaining exactly what happened that day.
Yes, I'd be glad to. It happened about 20 minutes past 4 o'clock in the afternoon. One of the engineers was closing the window in the building that we work, and noticed to be looking out of the sky above the monument, noticed these peculiar objects and called a friend of mine. He went down there and immediately called me, and a whole crowd of us congregated at the windows. In general, there were two major groups of whitish, almond-shaped objects which were being chased by a jet aircraft which had delta wing-shaped wings on them. These delta wings were on the back of the craft. I don't know what type it is. I think we have an F-111 that folds back like that now, but could not be sure of the type of craft. But while observing these objects and trying to see the details on them, I did happen to see one of the jets pursuing it and turning right behind one of these objects. The object was slightly larger than the jet, and by that I could figure out how big the objects were, because I know just about how big most of our jets are. The object was about, I would say, 35 or 40 feet in diameter. And our calculations showed that they were about 12 to 15,000 feet, about 3.5 to 4 miles away from us, and were moving well over 1,500 miles an hour. It might be interesting to note also that the Prime Minister of Japan was due to land at Andrews Air Force Base just a few miles away, 1.5 hour later than this sighting. So I imagine the government had good reason to have their jets up there protecting our official visitors.
That report from Mr. Dickey concerns a sighting in the Washington, D.C. area just a matter of weeks ago. Going back now to Mr. Hall, I read in the publication, the UFO Evidence, that there were continual references throughout the book about the famous, and that's in quotes, UFO sightings in the Washington and general Virginia area during the year 1952. I asked Mr. Hall if he could give us some explanation for this, exactly why it was considered such a famous thing, and exactly what occurred during the July and August period of 1952 in the Washington and Virginia area.
Yes, 1952 was one of the peak periods of UFO sightings. I believe it still is, even by the Air Force's figures. There were something like 1,700 admitted sightings that year. Now, we call them famous UFO sightings because by this time the Air Force had already explained all UFOs away, but the UFOs didn't cooperate, and they came back and buzzed over the Capitol and the White House and over many restricted flying areas. They were tracked on radar. They were seen simultaneously by airline pilots who saw them right where the radar said they should be seen.
And this went on for two consecutive weekends right over the heart of Washington.
Another section of NICAP's publication, The UFO Evidence, was concerned with something called angel's hair, which I was completely fascinated with. I asked Mr. Hall exactly what angel's hair was and how, if it does, tie in with UFO sightings.
Well, we don't really know what it is, but it's one of those borderline things where some of it seems to be explained as gossamer, which is web-like material that's spun by ballooning spiders. And quite often these reports of angel's hair occur in the month of October, which is the migrating season for ballooning spiders. But there are other cases on record of material which is very much like gossamer, with the one big exception that it seems to dissipate if you touch it. There's no reason for gossamer to do this. The angel's hair disappears quite readily and is therefore extremely difficult to analyze, but it sometimes falls in great quantity and drapes itself over telephone poles and trees, and you would need thousands and thousands of spiders flying around to produce the quantity of material. So it's just one of these oddities that may or may not be related to UFOs.
Another question which we have not hit on, but just as a sideline, I am putting it in this report. Going back once again to Mr. Paul Dickey, who you may remember is a member of NICAP and is employed as a communications engineer with the U.S. government. I asked Mr. Dickey if he knew of any attempts by private concerns or by the U.S. government himself of attempts to communicate with beings within these craft, going even further, presuming that there are actually spacecrafts up there. Mr. Dickey had this reply for us.
Yes, I know of several different types of attempts to communicate. There have been attempts by people that I know of to communicate through light beams. These were unsuccessful to my knowledge. There have been attempts to communicate by radio. I have heard rumors that they were successful. I do not know of any successful ones. There have been communications that I am sure of by people that I know where information was beamed to them in a semi-telepathic manner in which they received information from these beings, something like ESP. This may sound strange, but on a scientific basis, I do believe that it is possible.
Believing that or not, it certainly is a very interesting idea. Going back once again to Mr. Hall, the acting director of the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomenon, we asked Mr. Hall what NICAP does when they get a report of a UFO sighting.
Whenever possible, we try to go right to the witnesses and to get first-hand information. We have investigation units scattered around the country that go out in the field, equipped with tape recorders and Geiger counters and other detection equipment. We try to get the first-hand information to check out possible explanations, to check on character and background of the individuals concerned. We do have a standard UFO report form, which we try to get witnesses to fill out.
My last question to Mr. Hall, the acting director of NICAP, was, quote, Mr. Hall, have you ever seen a flying saucer?
Not really. I saw one light phenomenon several years ago at night, but I wouldn't consider it a good UFO report. I couldn't explain it. I couldn't even be sure it was a solid object. It was just a light darting around and back and forth. But I'm not the type that holds that seeing is believing, because I believe in Australia and I've never seen it.
And so ends this week's Impact Close-Up. This week, NICAP, the National Investigation Committee of Aerial Phenomenon. Our story for tonight is over, but NICAP's story is just beginning. In the weeks and months to come, a lot more will be heard from this organization. Whether you believe in flying saucers or not isn't really important, but I do believe you should have an open mind on the subject. If you do believe, or would just like more information on the idea itself, you may join NICAP for a yearly fee of $5. This entitles you to at least 6 bulletins a year, the bulletin referring to the UFO investigator. And for an additional $4, you can purchase the UFO evidence. If you would just like the UFO evidence alone, the price is $5. NICAP's address is 1536 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest, Washington, D.C. By the way, I too have never seen Australia, but I believe in it.